Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Symbolic Connection Podcast for today. I'm one of your co-hosts. My name is Tuya. I'm with Ku. Hi, Ku.
Hey, hi, Tuya. Hi, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to Symbolic Connection Podcast.
Yes, it's been a while.
Yes, it's been a while, definitely. Huh? Look, all of us have been busy, but hey, we're coming back to discuss another important topic.
Yes.
So what topic are we talking about?
So recently, right, there's a lot of ethics courses that I attended, and also there's AI ethics is one of the top popular topic to talk about. So shall we discuss on that?
Yeah, let's talk about AI ethics. That, I mean, it's a popular topic, and I'm sure a lot of people has also their own opinions. And also, maybe what we'll do is we throw our opinions out, and then let's invite other people's opinion to have a good discussion on it. Yeah.
Yes, so let's stress the fact that this is our opinions. There's no way near the facts, and no, we are not the ethic AI researcher in the space. So please don't hold the words against with us. Right, we're just trying to voice out our opinion. That's it.
Yeah, we just want to invite a healthy discussion on it. Yes.
Yes. All right. So I mean, cool. I mean, not a lot of people are from these AI backgrounds and have a chance to work with AI stuff. So what does AI ethic means? Is it very similar to what AI is supposed to be, or is it very different?
I've been reading about ethics in the first place. So if you look at AI ethics, right, there are two parts. Right? If you look at the term AI ethics, there are two parts. So one part is AI. The other one is also talking about ethics as well. So I think ethics has been a very active topic in the philosophy field. Right, it's part of philosophy. So they have been talking about ethics for quite a while. So recently I did a quick study on what ethics is. I don't think the quick study will do justification to it, but based on a quick glance about what ethics is, right? There is actually different types of ethics in the first place, no? So there are ethics that are based on culture, there are ethics that are based on value, there are different types of ethics like there's a Nicomedean ethics, and there are ethics that are proposed by many great philosophers like Kant, Hume, and so on and so forth. So there are many different types in the first place. So that's one. The other thing, of course, is about AI. So AI, we've been talking about for quite a while already. So after the discussion and all this, right, I kind of feel that even within humans itself, we may have different ideas about what ethics is in the first place. Even though, of course, there are certain things that are pretty general that everyone will agree. Like, for instance, you don't take someone's life. You don't take away someone's life. So that one is pretty generic. Everyone will agree with it. But there are things that may not be the case. Like, for instance, you talk about stealing. So we talk about stealing, right? So if you are someone who says that stealing is always going to be bad, right? Then in your eyes, you probably say that, hey, Robin Hood is bad. But because Robin Hood actually steals from the poor to give to
give the
rich. Steal from the rich. Steal from the rich to give to the poor. Yeah, I'm just trying to see whether our audience are listening to us. So that's where things get a bit more grayish and discussion. There's a lot more discussion ongoing as well. So the more I look at it, right, it's very challenging even for humans to be ethical in the first place, because that definition of ethics is so blur, blur, right? The boundaries are not so well defined, right? And you want to talk about getting AI to be ethical, something which is built by humans, right? Something that is built by humans. If it's not built by humans, we don't have quality artificial in the first place. So the more I think about it, the more I look at it, right, I kind of feel that what we should be focusing on, right, is AI professional ethics. That means make the AI professions, the AI professionals who are working in the field, right, people who are working in the AI field, right, to think about using AI more ethically. Where can we use AI to be more impactful and also ethically as well? Yeah. What about you, Tuya?
Like the conversation that you had is sort of opened up a lot of things in my mind, right? Like, for example, stealing is wrong. But what if you are stealing to save people, right? Like what Robin Hood did.
Yeah.
But we still charge him, right? He was imprisoned for like a year, I mean, number of years. Mm. He recently just came out. After he died, he finished his sentences. So,
yeah.
I mean, ethical concepts are defined by human, right? Like, so as a society that we progress into, you know, advanced, more advanced, then we start thinking about these ethics in different lights, right? So I don't think people in like, you know, very long time ago, maybe like 100,000s or something years ago, start talking about ethics at the moment, right? Because they have some other things that pressing matters to deal with before. And of course, different generation will have different kind of ethics, right? Like last time, you know, we are more forgiving in terms of these kind of things, but nowadays we start to see the implication of having ethics in place and not having them in place, how these systems treat people differently. These are more transparent right now because we are really seeing the effect of not having ethics in the first place.
Yeah.
So I
think the other... Go ahead.
Yeah, so and like being morally right or wrong, sometimes is also, like you said, is subjective, right? Like in some culture, it might be considered as morally okay to do certain things, but in other culture, it's like totally against it, right? Yeah, so...
Yeah, you point out something also quite interesting as well, and that is, I think we have to see things separately. So there may be things that is ethical, that is unethical, but don't break the law. There are also things that is ethical, or may not break the law. No, I think that one may not count. What I'm saying is that there are two systems. There's a justice system, there's an ethical system, and they may not overlap each other. Yeah, so that's also something that we need to think about going forward if you're going to talk about AI being used ethically. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yes. I mean, like, there are some cases where, you know, people think the person shouldn't be charged with a justice system because they did something right for some group of people, right? And a lot of people think he did the right thing or she did the right thing. But in the eyes of law, you have to get charged because this is justice system.
Yeah, so the justice. So like, just on the example that you brought out, let's say, for instance, if someone is stealing medical supplies to save a life, under the law, it still has to be charged, right? Under the law, it still has to be charged because you have broken the law. But once it comes to like ethical discussion, right? Hey, is this ethical or not? Right? There will be people who will find this, will be a bit more forgiving and say, yes, it should be punished by law, but we shouldn't go, maybe we don't punish the full extent, right? So that's also where intention comes into the picture. Do you intend to cause harm or do you not intend to cause harm? So that's also another discussion to think about, no, when we talk about AI ethics over here. Yeah.
So does it mean like we measure things in overall goodness compared to like, you know, okay, you steal something, that's like negative point, right? But you steal medical supply to save someone's life, which is a lot more positive than you stealing. So overall is positive. Then people would think like, oh, this is, you know, okay.
Yeah, but is it overall positive? No, I think that's the question, right? Because there will be people who are a bit more unforgiving. Right? Let's be fair to them. I think it's okay if you're unforgiving because you see other things as well. Like for instance, you can always continue this discussion and say that, hey, maybe the medical supplies, if you didn't steal it, right, it could be meant for someone who is more in need of it. Right? So that's another dimension to think about already if you're going to continue with that discussion. So if you ask, if you look at it, right, so each cases that we look at, right, it's going to be very, very different from each other. And any ethics discussion, right, will be very context-driven and also could be very data-driven. That means the more data you have, it could sway decisions. It could sway decisions because Like for instance, just now our discussion stopped at, oh, it still supplies to save a life, right? Again, what if we add in another dimension, say that, hey, maybe the medical supplies could have helped someone else, which is more in need, right? So, so once you collect more data in, right, then the discussion gets more interesting, I would say, more interesting and also more considerations going forward. So I think to sort of round up this section over here, right, I think we all agree that we are looking at AI professional ethics rather than AI ethics. That means what we want is we want to use AI ethically. So that's one. There's a separation between ethics and justice. There's a separation over there, right? And I think each case is very context-driven. And I think that's also the reason why for a justice system, we have judges. At the end of the day, because it can be very subjective.
Right? And also juries, subjective. Right? Like there are people who listen to the whole story and say guilty, not guilty.
Exactly. So depending on which justice system you're in, right? So there's also the jury, there's also the judges as well to pass a judgment. Yeah.
So it's not something that one person can come up with. It's rather a collective effort, right?
Yeah, so it's a collective effort. So again, you go back to a point again and says that I personally don't really believe you can build ethical AI. But what I believe is we can make AI impactful and use AI ethically.
Yeah. Okay, did that bring out a very good, topic to talk about? What does ethics in AI means? Right. Now we talk about ethics, let's move a little bit further into the domain of AI.
So putting again together, right, like I said, it's AI professionals ethics, right? So what we want is we want to focus on the professional. We want to focus on the professional. When I say focus on the professional means that we want professionals who are working in the AI industry, right, to start thinking about how to use AI effectively, efficiently, and more important, ethically. So this is where design comes into picture. You have to be able to design an AI that can be those three E's, right? Effective, efficient, and ethically. Why I'm saying that also is because if you look at recent history, right, like for instance, during the 2000s, where we have Enron and Tyco. So if for audience who are not familiar, right, what happens is these two companies were brought down significantly, right, when accounting frauds was discovered. And this accounting frauds, right, is a result of trying to cover losses. And how they cover losses, right, is they have consultants and accountants. Not all of them first. I say first, not all of them are ethical. They could be other things that pressure them to do something that's unethical in the first place. But all in all, again, goes back to human touch again. Right? If you look at it, it goes back to human touch again. So more importantly, I go back to my point, would be AI ethics, right? I would rather call it AI professional ethics. Making professionals who are working in AI, right, to think about ethics, to think about the impact of their work. I think that is something I would aim for going forward. How about you, Tuya?
Yeah, that's interesting fact. So because I came from a software engineering background, right, so there was some courses that we have to take. It's called safety critical system, right? So how do we build safety in our software that we do, right? So there are cases where, because programming can be applied in many domains and many of the projects, right? And barely written codes can introduce bugs, right? But depends on the system that you're running on. Sandbugs is just nothing, right? It probably, make your website go dark for maybe a few seconds, a few minutes. But sometimes the bug can really kill the entire system and then, start exploding, right? Like, let's say you are building a system for nuclear plants, right? Try to monitor the trend and then do reaction accordingly. But if you have a bug in it, then the nuclear plant might explode, right? Then it might affect entire area around that region and the people who are working in it. But if you're working in like website, then whatever bugs you introduce, probably, you know, some glitches in the checkout system, people can buy stuff. And that's pretty much it, right? No one get killed or anything. So there was courses where we have to take called safety critical system, that there's like, you have to meet a certain grade of software. So let's say your system require you to have a grade one, then your quality of the software that you ship out has to meet this standard of grade one as well. So there's a governing body that decide, okay, you need to do, you know, test coverage, right? You need to make sure your code is easily verified by, you know, three people, something like that. And three people have to like do check off, right? Oh, I look, this look good to me, this look good to me, good to me, things like that. So I think that's something that we didn't really think of as an AI ethic kind of thing, but it's more like software standard, right? So so if you're keeping that software standard, there might be implication of, you know, meeting some of the AI ethic criteria as well. Because AI also have this coding element of things, right? So if you keep this kind of standard, then we can sort of expand into the ethic as well.
You're right. I think in that sense, right, I think what we are advocating over here is keep the AI, keep the ethics to the human. So that when it's not necessarily only apply to the AI domain, right, but in other domains like software engineering, accounting, and all this, right, we are able to use the tools in a more ethical way. That, I think that's something I would say we have for now based on the discussion that we have.
So okay, after we define, you know, AI ethics, right, can we talk about what can be the implication if we don't have AI ethics in the system that we build as a professional?
I think so as a professional, my point to that would be, what are the implications of not having AI ethics, right, would be trust. I think the key word is trust. If you do not build ethical AIs that is, because then you'll hurt people, right? You'll hurt people. And once you have people hurt, chances are the trust level of the particular AI tools, right, will drop. Will drop. And dropping may not be a good thing as well if the trust level keeps on reducing, because then it makes the work of any AI professionals quite challenging. Because besides building the tool, right, the other thing now is you have to work on education, which even without any of this AI ethics that we're talking about, right, trying to educate the stakeholders, trying to educate the layman and all this, can be quite challenging really. And now you're sort of going to discuss it at a low trust level, right? That's going to make it even more challenging, because if I were to put a sort of an analogy, right, it's like previously when you talk to the stakeholders, right, there isn't a wall in between. But once you build AI that is harmful, people will start going to build a wall in front of them. And then the communication is going to break down. It won't be easy, because you have to try and break the wall first before you try to break the understanding. Yeah, you have to make it more receptive first. So all in all, I feel that the implications of not having AI ethics will be trust. You're going to go into a low trust level that makes any job or any project very challenging later on. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that sort of bring up a very good point, right? Because trust can be also internal trust, right? Let's say, because AI system, you have to use like a lot of data, and there will be a data owner who is allowed to, you know, grants data to you to use for AI purposes. But because you don't have any ethics in place, so they also have to aware, like, okay, how are you going to use my data, right? Is it you're going to identify for some benefits out of things, or is it more, you know, fair to everyone, right? And how are you going to ensure that the data are properly used in the system, right? you didn't use it for your personal games and things like that, right? So there will also be an internal trust issue, right? Because, they don't have any ethics in place. So I'm reluctant to give my data away just like that.
Yeah, you're right. At the end of the day, I think most people, to a certain extent, not to a full extent, but to a certain extent, they are okay to give the data away as a currency, as long as they have two things in mind. First thing first, I give it away, I don't cause any harm to myself. That's the first question. Then the second question is, if I give this, okay, great that I give my data over, right? I don't have any harmful implication to myself, and I get benefits. Also from it. So, because if you have read Thinking Fast and Slow, Daniel Kahneman has already said that we humans, at the end of the day, the first thing that we want to avoid is loss. Then we talk about benefits.
Yes.
Most of the people, when we look at it, right? So if I don't trust it anymore, right? Then of course, like what you mentioned, then we don't give the data over. I think the other thing is also, if you look at AI, at the end of the day, data is lifeblood of AI, especially if you're doing machine learning, which is like supervised learning and unsupervised learning, where you usually have to use individual work, individual data. So that's the implication. So if the trust breaks down because you're not using AI ethically, then it forms a stranglehold on the data. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, in summary, it will be like cause trust issue, adoption issue, right? Like user picking up the system, whether they will be trust to use a system. They wouldn't want to use something that sort of cause harm to them and also cause harm to other people. Right? So these are the things that we have to take. Right. Yeah. And flip it other way around, right? So what can we get from implementing that AI ethics in the system? What are the benefits?
So if you look at benefits, of course, the first thing we have already discussed it under the implication, and that is availability of data. So if I look at it from a consumer point of view, right, I'll say that, hey, okay, I know that this particular company uses my data responsibly and build good tools out of it, tools that don't harm people, don't harm other people. Chances are, I'm not saying that it's 100%, but chances are, as a consumer, you're more willing to sort of part your data out. That's one. Second thing is also, I'm willing to use the tools. I'm willing to sort of support the tool because the tool is creating a positive impact rather than a harmful impact. Yeah, so I would say that would be the biggest benefit for companies who use AI ethically. Who at least show that they do think about building ethical AI tools. Then I'm willing, for me as a consumer, I'm willing to support that.
Okay, in this sense, right, like because it's a responsibility that involved in it, right? So how do we make it responsible, right? Who do we account for, right, if something goes wrong in the system?
Yeah, okay. So that's another big discussion to talk about, right? Who is responsible for it, right? If I look at any AI projects, there will be three stakeholders. There'll be the designer.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be the business stakeholders, the people with the domain knowledge. Then there's also the engineer as well, right? If you look at any data projects or AI projects, there will be these three people. So the stakeholders will be the one that give the business requirements, right? There will also be so that's the business stakeholders. Then there will be the designer, usually the AI scientist or the data scientist. They will have to translate the business requirement to a technical requirement. Then after that, you have the engineer, which will then translate the whole project, right, into implementation, into the application, into the implementation. But there's also the application later on. So application, again, I think involves all three parties as well. Application as in like how you're going to use the AI tool. How you're going to use the AI tool. Right? So that one involves all three parties, designer, the business stakeholders, and also the engineer. So this is where things get quite complicated. How do you do the responsibility then? Mm-hmm. If you ask me, everyone is responsible, right? Everyone is responsible. But at the end of the day, right, any projects that's also different apportionment of responsibility, right? Could be some projects where the engineer has a larger responsibility compared to the designer, which is a scientist. And there may be projects where actually the stakeholders are the ones that has a lot more responsibility compared to the other two parties, which is the engineer and the business stakeholders. So the question then will be, how do we apportion the blame then? And actually, even before that, right, we probably have to even look at what caused the harmful effect.
Mm.
Right, what in each of the contexts. Let's say, for instance, if you look at self-driving car, right, if you look at self-driving car, right, is it always going to be the self-driving car responsibility, or it could be a commuter responsibility, people who are on the road? So that's also another thing. So if you look at the whole thing, right, I would say it's pretty much context-driven again. It really depends on the case study that we're looking at. And what was the true cause of it in the first place? So that's another question. And once you find the true cause of it already, right, this is where things get very challenging already. How do we apportion the blame? Right, how do we apportion the blame? So, but once you apportion the blame, right, then the next discussion is, how do we apportion the punishment?
Yeah.
Let's say there's a punishment. And let's say the punishment is going to jail. Then how do you apportion it? Or you take 30 days, I think the designer takes 50 days, the engineer takes 10 days, and then the business stakeholder said, no, not my fault, right? Y'all do one. So I'm not responsible, don't put me in jail. And also, again, goes back to that discussion that we had, which is the justice system again. So that's that layer of things that we need to go through to talk about how do we hold AI responsible, or can we even hold AI responsible in the first place? So that's that discussion we probably would have.
Yes, and it sort of bring up some of the things that I went through as personally for the machine learning projects that we want to deploy. So, I mean, if listeners knows, I used to be a machine learning engineer working in deploying the machine learning software to the production, right? I may not be the person necessarily to design the system or the scope up, translate from business requirement to technical requirements, or even the ones that build the model, right? So when everything come to my plate is already pretty much, fixed, right? Like business requirements are fixed. The technical portions are also fixed. The model used and the parameters are pretty much fixed as well. So what we need to do is to make sure that the models can be run in production environment. And of course, if there's any bottleneck, we have to clean out the bottleneck, things like that.
Yeah.
But the thing is, if the problems go, be it, it cannot detect the system, it cannot use inference or something like that in the wild, it becomes our fault because we are the ones that deploy to the production system. But we have no idea how it all got started, right? Like who did the business sensing, what kind of problem they're trying to solve. So in order to prevent these kind of things from happening, we start to question the people who want to deploy the model, right? So why are you doing this? Right, like from our side, it's just pretty much to protect ourselves if something goes wrong, because we are the ones that we are the gatekeeper between the POC to the production system, right? So we started having that kind of checklist for them to fail, right? What's the implication of not implementing these things into the production, right? What's so good about this? So we have this checklist for us to go through, right? Who is the business owner? What are the challenges are you solving? Have you get signed off from your business owner? What kind of things will happen if you don't implement it, right? And what are the benefits we will get from implementing it, right? And what are the ways it will go around? And have you consulted to, you know, some of the people who are responsible for this? Mm. Yeah, so those are the checklists that we came up with. Basically, because we are the one has to answer all these questions if the system goes wrong in the production system. So before we deploy it, we ask that checklist to the people who want to deploy it. It sort of gave us some assurance and understanding for the system that we want to deploy.
Mm. So you point out something quite interesting, checklist.
Yeah.
Right. So checklist will be good when you are in a sort of high cost, high risk environment. And sometimes AI tools are being used in such an environment in the first place. So as common example I can give will be like, for instance, if you look at the airline industry, right, before a pilot start flying an airplane and all this, they actually do have a checklist that they have to go through to ensure that the airplane is actually airworthy, as in they can fly on the in the air. So I think that's something that we should be looking at as well. If we want to start using AI, start building AI tools that can be used ethically. So we need a checklist. I think we do need a checklist. However, the question is this, then how do we build that checklist? Right? How do we build the checklist? Of course, there are certain things we can immediately put it in, right? Like for instance, have we seek approval? Have we talked about all these different scenarios?
Yep.
So on and so if you have talked about all these scenarios, then okay, checklist, you can check them out. But what's gonna happen is what's going to happen is you have this thing called, I'll call it a checklist bloatedness. Mm. Right, as you go along, chances are your checklist is going to get longer and longer. And the longer it is, right, the more time you need to spend to determine whether this AI tools, right, is it ethical worthy?
Yes.
Put it this way, ethically worthy, right, ethically worthy. So that's something also we have to we should foresee and we should try to work with as well, like how do we ensure this checklist doesn't get too bloated. You definitely will get bloated lah. Let's not deny that you definitely will get bloated along the way. So the question is then how do we manage this bloatedness so that we are still able to push out these AI tools on time. Because from a business point of view, right? From a business point of view, we want to push these tools out as soon as possible. Mm. Because it's either going to help us to reduce costs or it's going to increase our revenue.
Yep.
That's capitalism at work. So you can't run away from that.
Yes.
You can't run away from that, right? So then the question is, how do we manage it? Because if you don't manage that bloatedness, right, chances are people is going to start taking risks.
Yeah.
They said, okay, I think the whole checklist is not done. But with the pressure of profit, right? With the pressure of profit, you will have people taking risks. You have people taking risks already. And this brings another point. This brings up another point, and that is how do you comply? How do you ensure compliance?
Mm.
Right? How do you ensure compliance with the checklist? How do you know that the person has already checked off everything on the checklist before pushing it? Because if there's no compliance, right, if there's no one to audit and regulate, right, chances are people still start taking risks.
Yes. Right?
Even though, yeah, correct.
So, I mean, like, one of the ways that we try is by putting people names in the checklist. So you can't run away from, I already checked it, because your name is there, right? So when you ask people to put their name, they will think twice before doing something, right? Like, because if you are more willing to take risks, if the repercussion doesn't come to you directly, right? And once you start putting your name there, you will ensure, right? Because my name is on the chopping board now, right? If something goes wrong, it might affect me directly. And there's no way around it because you chop your name there.
Yeah. Actually, you're starting to see some similarity here with the accounting, with the accounting fraud that we encountered during the 2000, right? Now, because of the 2000, right? Because of 2000, what happened with Enron and Tyco, right? You now have all the CFO and the CEOs have to sign off the financial statements, right?
Exactly.
To make sure that they're responsible. Now it's like, okay, you AI engineers or AI scientists, right? Or even the business stakeholders who are working on this project, better sign off sign off to make sure that the checklist has been done, to ensure that it has been done, and then push out the tools. Push out the tools. Yeah.
And of course, there will be always struggle, right? Like, I want to beat the market because I need to up this system before my competitors push it out, right? But at the same time, you also have to ensure all the checklists, whether you have proper sign-off, whether you have followed some principle, you know, whether you know what's going to happen if this thing go wrong, and who is responsible for what part of the system.
So I just thought of another thing. The thing is this, now you're making your scientists, your engineer, your business stakeholders to sign off already, right? It's a risk they have to take. There's still some risk that they have to take, right? So the question then will be, will the company be willing to pay someone to take up the risk?
Yes.
I mean, let's put ourselves in their shoes, right? Let's say, for instance, I put myself in the shoe. Wow, you ask me to sign all these checklists. Yes, there's some responsibility help already, right? Then I definitely will definitely work on it. That's one. Second thing is also, I'm still also taking out a risk, you know, in the sense that how do I prove that I have already done all this on the checklist also? Right? There may be some things that is easier to prove. There may be some things that are not easy to prove. So you're taking that risk also. You're taking up that risk also. So naturally, in capitalism, right, how do you compensate for taking out the risk will be,
reward,
are you going to give me, give me more salary, right? rewards. So how, again, then the question is, will companies do that again? So I think that's another top process I want to start with our audience. Yeah.
We have a lot to think about.
Yeah, there's a lot to think about, I feel. It's like you pull one side of a string, right? The others also have to gets also implicated as well, because there's impact to them. Yeah.
So could that sort of bring up one question that I have, right? If your boss asks you to do something that is not ethically right, because, you know, you always compare with, like, you know, risk and reward kind of situation in the imperialism. So if your boss asks you to do something unethical, right, would you follow through? Because if you don't, you might get fired, right?
I think this is a question where, even though you're not talking about AI, right, if you're talking about just data alone or working with data alone, that's also a question. That's also going to be a quite interesting question, right? I would say, I mean, if this is a multiple choice question, yes or no, right? Generally, you'll say no, I'm not going to do it. So does that really work in real life? Because now this is also an ethical question, right?
Yes.
If you look at it. Once it goes live, so to speak, that means once it happens in reality, right? There's a lot of things to consider. Yeah. Like, are you okay? So first thing first, of course, the first question you probably will want to run through in your mind is, are you a breadwinner first? Right? Because at the end of the day, especially given the current economy that we are having, which is high inflation right now, losing a job can be quite painful. Right, losing
a job can be true. Painful. Yes.
Yeah. So, are you prepared to lose a job to maintain your integrity? So that's one question you have to think about. Right, that's one question you have to think about. However, I think the other thing is, I hope when anyone who meets with this situation, you have to think longer term. Because just some of the questions that we posted, right, is actually very short term.
Yep.
It's very, very short term. You have to think about the longer term in the first place. So why I say longer term is this. Based on the decision that you're going to make, right, it definitely will have longer term implication. Why? Because if you lose a job because of loss of integrity.
Yep.
If you look at it, right, any employees going forward, it's not going to hire you. Because why would you want to hire someone who doesn't have any, I won't say doesn't have any, but whose integrity has been taken a hit? Will you trust this person in the first place or not? Right? Will you trust this person in the first place? So what I like the audience to think about is, besides the short term, it's also a longer term as well, right? So if you make a if you make any decisions with regards to the boss request, right, do think about the longer term implication. For me, if I meet with such a scenario, given my circumstances and all this, right, I think I will say no.
Mm.
And I'll state down the reason saying, no, we shouldn't be doing something like this. And if the boss is something that insists that you should be doing it, right, you look at it from a longer term perspective, I think it's a boss not worth working for also.
Yeah.
You won't be able to learn much. That's one. Second thing is this kind of boss, right, is a devil. It's a devil in disguise, right? it's a devil in disguise if you look at it. So there's also the other part. Here's what I'm thinking of also. So when your boss doesn't want to follow ethics in the first place, right? There's also the question of, remember just now we were talking about stealing, right? We're talking about stealing, which can be a very gray area. So it also depends on what the boss is asking about you, asking from you. Because a boss may see as okay, not saying that it's unethical, but may see okay. But you yourself, based on your own beliefs and values and all this, right, and says the answer is no.
Mm.
Right. So there could be such a scenario, although I can't come up with one now at the moment. But if I look at the whole thing, right, I still go back to the same thing, and that is you always think about your short-term and long-term implications of your decision. Always think about that. That's a key. And at least for me, right, I'll just say no, because integrity goes with me throughout my whole life, not only career, but also personal and social life as well.
I mean that's sort of something that resonates with me, because I have a lot of personal story that sort of test my integrity as a person. Because when I first come to Singapore, there was a job that I have to do. It's a very shady job, but you know, I have to do it because that's like, you know, my part-time job, and it's pretty much what I like to do. So the thing is to sell used laptop. So I like, you know, used laptop is not brand new for a start.
Mm.
So sometimes the boss will say, hey, don't mention the fact that this is used, right? So people will assume that this is a new one and it's slightly cheaper than the new ones, right? So they would tend to buy from us more if you don't say the term used. But my thinking is that if we don't say used, people who don't know will buy it and then it's their money, right? Like they might be getting money from, you know, various sources, but it's their hard-earned money. And because we are not saying this is used, they might think this is new and then they buy it. There's some issue. They come back and it's sort of like, you know, not doing something great for the people that will buy it. Like we're not caring about the customer.
Mm.
So there was times that test my integrity as a seller or the salesperson. Mm. Right. So, I mean, there's nothing wrong with not saying use, right? Because the customer should be doing due diligence before they buy stuff, right? But it doesn't really sit well with me for not saying this kind of thing. So not staying out the facts to the customer, right? Mm-hmm. So once I start to have that kind of friction with my personality and also the work, right? I quit the job. So, and it was like, you know, really hard decision, because at the time, the job is like quite sacred. I can't really find a good job to pay that well to do in my current state, you know. So I mean, I chose that. And then every time I was questioned in this kind of scenario, I would just say, hey, last time I didn't have any backup job, right? I didn't have a lot of money, but I decided to leave that job in favor of my personal integrity. Then I could do that again, right? Because now I'm more aware of, right, I have more skills, I have more opportunity, right? If I don't like this, I can go somewhere else, right? What's stopping me from doing it now? So I already passed that hardest stage in my life that sort of, you know, I favor my integrity more. So now it's like a little bit, you know, I would say fortunate that I am in this position where I could just say no to that kind of dilemma, right?
Mm. That's good. That's good. I happy for you that you pull through. You pull through. yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So we talk a lot about AI ethics and all these sort of things, but where do we go from here, right? What's the current state, right? What's like, do we teach everyone's, you know, come into the rooms, I start talking about ethics and you know, where do we go from here?
Yeah, okay. So this is where we talk about moral ethics education. Okay, but I want to see from AI perspective. I want to see from AI perspective. So I don't think that everyone should learn. Everyone should learn about ethics and ethics, especially besides the technical knowledge. So the way I look at it, right, is yes, we do need to teach everyone about ethics. As long as you're going to work in the AI industry, right, we should be teaching about that. However, I just want to point out something, and that is certification. So recently, there's this thing about certification on using AI ethically and also governance and all this. I think governance is okay. If you want to do certification on governance, I think it's okay. But if you want to do certification on AI ethics, right, I'm a bit skeptical. I'm a bit skeptical because at the end of the day, right, like just on the discussion that we had where the boss is unethical, right, I ask you to do something that's unethical, right? Generally, on paper, we'll just give the right answer. We'll always be able to give the right answer. No matter how evil I am, right? No matter how evil I am, put it in quotes, right, I'll still be able to give you the right answer. No issues at all.
Mm.
Right? But at the end of the day, it's the action that you take once the scenario happens. So no amount of certification is going to be able to predict whether you're going to take the right action or not. No amount of certification, I felt. So that's my thinking. Okay, so the question, let's come back again, right, the discussion as how do we improve? How do we improve going forward? So I see it as two perspectives. I would say two areas that we need to improve. So first thing first is the tools. We need to improve our technical knowledge in AI. The more tools that we have, right, the higher the chance that we can overcome a dilemma. The higher the chance. I'm not saying that it will, but there's a higher chance of it once you have understanding of different tools, right? So we need to consistently improve our technical knowledge. So that's one part. Now the other thing is also when I'm looking at the whole thing, right? I think we need to be exposed to as many failed use cases as much as possible. Why they fail? What effect did they cause? What harmful effect did they cause? So we need that. We need that. The more exposure we have, right, the better it is. That the greater the awareness. And with that greater awareness, it can translate through the technical knowledge, right, into the implementation. Hey, have you watched out for this? Because I've heard about this failed use case.
Mm.
Now, that's where things get a bit challenging. Because no companies will announce their failed use cases unless it's something that caught the media eye already. It's something that you cannot bring it back in, right? Mm. It's something that you cannot sort of bring it back and sort of work on it internally anymore, right? So that's why we keep on hearing all these different issues. Like one of the common one will be COMPASS, which is a scoring for recidivism, whether a person is likely to go back to jail or not.
Mm.
So those are prominent. Reason being is they're already out there in the public, eyes. So those failed use cases are good to teach the future AI scientists or future engineers and all this to understand it. However, such failed use cases, like I said, it's not going to be a lot because no one is going to announce such thing in the first place, right? Yeah, so those cases are far and few. So how do we go about it then in that case? I would just say you have to prepare to fail.
Yep.
Yeah, you have to have the process, right? A process set up to cater to the failures, to the possible failures. So when you look at failures, there are two types. One is foreseeable failure. The other one is unforeseeable failure. So you have to have a process to cater to both. Not easy. All these are just talks only. But I kind of feel that you still have to be prepared. Learn all the field use cases available, but still have processes prepared, right, for what is to come. Because likely case failure is going to come. It's just a matter of when. It's just a matter of when. So to summarize for the audience, right, I think there are two areas. Technical knowledge and field use cases. The more exposure you have to technical knowledge, the more exposure you have to field use cases, I think we will then start to think about using AI more ethically. Yeah.
So in that essence, right, like, will it be more like an external party that enforces that kind of thing? So let's say there's like a government body that sees it, right? And then they sort of say, hey, you know, if you ever do AI system, and then there's some failures or there's some unethical things going on, you have to come up with a story to share with everybody, like to the benefits of everyone. In that case, would it, you know, be useful to have or not useful to have? What are your opinions?
Okay, so you point out something I think quite interesting that's running in my mind right now, right, is we probably need a national body.
Mm.
Probably need a national body to do that. Why a national body is because then you can collect data on use cases at the national level, which means you will have a lot more use cases, right? You will have a lot more use cases. And of course, the national body will also serve to form the regulation and compliance as well, to work on that particular piece as well. And also maybe be a think tank for the whole industry. And once you have all this research done already, right, you translate them into policies, into guidelines, and into laws as well. And then you push it downwards. So push it downwards already. This is where now the individual companies come into picture. So there is individual company to use the law, definitely, for compliance sake. Then there's also the policy and guideline, which is built on a bigger piece of data because it's at a national level, not at a company level. And then the company level use cases, right, put together with the national level use cases. And now you have a lot more use cases to work with to improve. And going back to the discussion we had previously, right, will be if you start to show that you're using these use cases, right, to build ethical AI, so this is where you're going to be able to have the benefits. Your consumer is going to trust you with the data, and consumer is also likely to use your tools because there's a benefit, all right? There's a benefit, that's one. Second thing is also, I know that my data is not going to cause harm. And the usage of the tool is not going to cause harm to me as well. Yeah. So I think that there's a, to summarize quickly, there should be a national body.
Mm.
And the individual company are incentivized, right, to use AI ethically, I feel.
They should also send like representative to the national body, right? So not just some external one. So the segment of that also is from like company.
Yeah, and also, so this is one more thought also. And I think the other thing we should also be thinking about is that the national body, right? Who is inside the national body? What kind of people should be inside the national body? So the way I look at it, right, I would say we need a variety of people inside the national body. Definitely you need someone very technical, someone who's very familiar with AI. You probably need a philosopher to provide a different perspective. Not saying that we have to let the philosopher make the decision. No, philosopher, at the end of the day, their job is to discuss.
Yeah.
I feel. Yeah, their job is to discuss. So you need a philosopher, probably in the ethics area. You need someone very technical. When you say someone very technical, right, someone who's familiar with algorithms, you also need someone who's familiar with engineering. Right,
like what kind of can do in the system, kind of thing.
Exactly. And I think the other thing we shouldn't miss out, right, is someone who is familiar with this thing called jurisprudence. How do we use law to build a better society? So it could be a law professor, like it could be a law professor who probably has read up a lot of cases, right, where technology gone wrong. So so I think someone who's familiar with jurisprudence or someone who's very familiar with technology / law cases. Technology dash law cases are not slash, but dash. So I think you definitely need these people inside to form a more convincing committee that, A, when you put down any policies and guidelines or even laws, right, they are supported by technical knowledge. They are supported by ethics.
Moral ethics.
Yeah, correct. And they are supported by law, so to speak. So people can believe in that.
Yeah.
It's like you want to get rich, right? But you go and listen to a poor man. Now, of course, you're not going to get rich.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. So we need different players inside the committee in the national body to be convincing when they push down any policy guideline and law. Yeah. That's what I see.
And in some cases, the law also has to be revised, right? Like, because of this application, right? We have new laws coming out, or we have to update the existing laws, right?
So good point there, Toya. So the thing is, you probably also have to think about the frequency of the meeting, right? How often do they meet? And how often do they revise the policy guideline and the law, right, based on new technology that comes in? Because, like, for instance, now, right, when you talk about AI, everything is I won't say everything, but almost everything is about deep learning. Right? Almost everything is about deep learning. But who is to say, right? Who is to say that going forward, someone develops something even better than deep learning?
Yep.
Yeah, this one we do not know. No one can foresee the future. So in that case, right, probably now your guidelines, your policies and law, right, is built for deep learning models. But going forward, you probably have to revise if you have something, you have a better algorithm. So I think you point out something quite good, and that is we also need to think about the frequency of meeting and updates on the policy and guidelines. But if you talk about the frequency, right, this is something I just thought of, and that is, but if you frequently change your policy and guidelines, right, what's going to happen is the companies will start getting very confused. Companies may start getting very confused, like what to implement, what to apply and all this. So that one, I think I would say I don't have a solution for now, but it's something we have to balance.
We have to tune that hyperparameter.
we have to tune the hyperparameter to get better at using. That's a good point. So we have to tune the hyperparameter, right, to get better at using AI for impact and for and more ethically, I would say. Yeah. That's a good point there. Yeah.
Yep. So in Singapore, what's the current situation, and how can we do to improve as a technical practitioner in the space?
Okay, so we do have technical standards from what I remember for Singapore. So we do have technical standards. I would say AI is still quite nascent, quite dynamic. There's a lot more changes and all this. So any companies who are interested to pursue this route, right, which I strongly encourage, really look at all these policy and guidelines. For now, Singapore doesn't have it in law. They are mostly in policy, they are mostly in guidelines and all this. So try to implement them as much as possible for the companies. And then for, I think at the national level, we do have research body who are working on AI ethics. I believe SMU has such a research body that's doing that as well. And I think if I remember correctly, NUS also has that. So I'm not too sure about NUS, but I'm pretty sure about SMU. They do have such a research body for that. So we should have a research body that continuously explore how we can make AI ethically. How to make ethical AI, not ethical AI. And then quickly, again, we should have a process to translate those guidelines and policies, right, to the companies as much as possible and as fast as possible. Without, again, same thing, balancing that frequency of updates and all this also. I think that's what currently Singapore has at the moment. So there's a research body, there is a committee. Okay, there is a committee. A committee for finance industry, financial industry. There's also a committee for the overall sort of technology industry. Although there's some sort of discussion on the committee members and all this. So that one is another thing altogether. We're not going to go into that. There's also the research body as well. And I think the good thing is there's communication. There is communication on all these policies and guidelines, like, being communicated to the companies and businesses. Yeah, so I think that's something that we should look at. I think what I feel is lacking, right, is we need to build more use cases.
Mm.
We need to build and share more use cases. That is, I don't see a national level registry of use cases that that people can refer to, that a layman like us, right, like you, like Tuya and me, right, we can go in and look at what are the failed use cases or what are the best use cases. I don't see that at the moment. I might be wrong. I'm not saying that there isn't, but for now, I didn't see it. So if our audience have found it, please feel free to share with us. Yeah. So that's what we have for now in Singapore, at least.
Yeah, I mean, this is really a great discussion, Koo. I mean, in the interest of time, I think we already discussed for like an hour. So we just let this episode to the end, but we can continue the next time around with me.
Yes, yes, yes. First thing, of course, thank you very much to the audience for sticking with us till now on this discussion. I actually learned quite a fair bit also from Tuya's poking, which is good. Gives more flavor to the thought process I have when it comes to AI ethics as well. I hope the audience have find it useful. And if you've got any like questions you'd like us to discuss further on it, please feel free to share it with us. The feedback form is actually on our
description
page. Yep. Yes, it's on our description page. So feel free to reach out to us and let us know the questions. Not necessarily have to be AI ethics, it could be other questions that we can discuss altogether. Yeah.
All right. So thanks so much, Koo, for giving the time and answer a lot of my probing.
Hey, no problem. Thanks to you. And thank you, audience. Right.
Thanks everyone for listening, and see you guys next time.
Yeah, see you guys. And remember to follow us, subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform. Thank you.
Thank you.